This is the story of the one. Who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. Welcome to Fightful. Here with a name you know. You know him as a few different names. right now, you're going to know him. I assume it's Donovan Dijak moving forward.
Donovan Dijak. That's correct. Yep.
Donovan Dijak. You know, before we get into the real meat of this, it's very funny to me that WWE is often known for chopping off people's names and making them as simple as possible. And they went and added like extra syllables to yours when you first showed up.
Yeah.
Why?
I couldn't tell you. I can tell you. I guess
please
now.
Do. Yeah, you can tell me.
Yeah. So when I first came into WWE in 2017, my last match on the Indies was as Donovan Dijak, which, by the way, was a Wrestling Observer Newsletter 5-star match with Keith Lee at PWG. In case you're unfamiliar with the work of Donovan Dijak, so I came into WWE, and my first few times, for whatever reason, I wasn't on TV for like 6 months. It was very, that was at a time when they were kind of loading on like indie talent. Like I came in with Undisputed Era and Leo Rush. And so there's a bunch of people who were kind of ahead in line of me. So I kind of got put on the back burner for a little bit. But once I did make it on TV, they debuted me as Chris Dijak, which is my real name. Funny story about that. I was standing in Full Sail and the Tron was like coming up with a thing and it like flashed up and said Dijak. And I was like, oh, just Dijak. And then it slid down and said Chris. And I was like, oh, my real name is Chris, but almost nobody calls me Chris. Like my wife calls me Chris and my mom calls me Chris. And that's pretty much the end of the list. Other than that, most people called me Dijak, with a few people calling me Donovan. But yeah, almost everybody called me Dijak. So I was okay with that. But then the Chris came up and I was like, ooh, not in wrestling.
Barely cracks the top three of your bad WWE names, though. Barely.
I've had a lot. So I learned, this was back at a time when for whatever reason in NXT, you had to like bide your time and really wait and make a bunch of pitches and nothing happened quickly, for me anyway, or for most people who weren't like a Ring of Honor world champion or something like that. So I made a bunch of name pitches over the course of, I think it was over a year that I was in WWE, which is a long time in the grand scheme of things, especially when you're barely on TV and you're just at the performance center training every day. It's just the days just drag on. And I'm like 30 at this point, you know, I'm 30 years old. So I'm in like the prime of my career. I'm like, let's get this thing going, please. So finally we settled on Dominik Dijakovic, which was
how did you settle on that is what I want to know. The extra syllable.
Was not my choice. I'm going to try to keep names out of this as best I can. We all know who it probably was. The thought process being that I have a Croatian heritage. Dijak, the root of Dijak is Dijak. And we were having conversations about how can we make this sound more European. The thought process being like a Stipe Miocic kind of thing, where it's like you think he's going to be this sort of like European Ivan Dragunov sort of. Ivan Drago? Did I just...
Yeah, Ivan Drago, yeah.
Drago, yeah, I said Dragunov, like
Ilya. You combined them, which they kind of did to you.
Right, yeah, exactly. And then you hear me speak, and obviously I just have an American accent. So that would be the kind of the mix of the feeling there. So yeah, I was cool with Dominic. I liked that Dijak was still incorporated. I thought Dijakovic was a mouthful. I thought seven syllables was way too long for a WWE name, but that's what was kind of presented to me. And I was like, sure, please just put me on TV, please. So they did. And then from there we progressed to T-Bar.
Well, we will be talking about this. I'm very excited to. The Croatian person that I think of is Mirko Filipovic, but they never call him that. People just think his last name is Crow Cop because right. He was a Croatian cop. And they were like, that's easier. But with you, They're like, you know what? Let's make this as difficult as human.
Yeah, I took some inspiration from Crow Cop more aesthetically than anything else, right? Because I'm not, fighting people or beating anyone up. But in terms of the look and the aesthetic, I stole some of the Croatian patterns and stuff like that. I tried to do more kicks and can I swear?
Yeah, of course you can.
Kicks and shit. Now I can swear all I want. that's a good feeling. But yeah, that was kind of the general idea. I think it grew on people, right? Like by the end of the Dijakovic run, most people were calling me Dijakovic as opposed to Dijak. And then even... obviously, with the T-Bar switch, everyone was like, what the fuck? Please just call him Dijak.
Yeah.
And then even a little bit after I switched back to Dijak, there was like a 3 or 4 month buffer there where people were like, I miss Dijakovic. We want Dijakovic back. And I was like, I don't think you do. I think you'll like this version better.
T-Bar, I see when that name came up, I could have sworn that was the name of like a Streets of Rage like guy that you just beat up, the one with like the mohawk. That you just run along and beat up. I swore it was like a name from that. And obviously, this is the stuff everybody wants to hear about, not the stuff that you announced this week. They want to hear about your name changes. Mm-hmm. Any pushback on your behalf? And I mean, listen, I know you're not trying to name names, but listen, some of those names might not be there. Some of those names can't hurt you anymore.
No,
Donovan Dijak.
I'm a little bit more open to speak at the behest of him. So that's a long story in its own. The whole thing is such a long story.
Can I tell you what I heard about Retribution initially and see if it was right?
Yes.
Very rarely on the investor calls did Vince McMahon ever get pressured about viewership or creative? Mm-hmm. And in the heart of the pandemic, he was asked, what are you doing? There's another company that is out there doing creative stuff. What are you going to do? How are you going to bring up these numbers? And I heard that Vince hastily pitched Retribution right after that group with no idea of who would be in it.
I don't have any anecdote to prove that being true. That was never told to me. Mm-hmm. But if that were true, it would not surprise me even slightly. the whole feel of it was, we don't know. I know they didn't know because I was there speaking to him about it. So this is such a long story and I'm going to try to condense it as much as I possibly
can. Hell no. Don't condense it. Make our transcriptionist do that work.
Okay. I'll try my best, man. And the timeline is going to be so fucked up, but, so it's 2020, right? We're coming off Portland Takeover. Me and Keith have this great feud. I don't have a real solid sense of what the booking, right? Nobody in WWE has a super solid sense of the booking or the trajectory or where things are going, especially talent. Maybe those in charge do, but talent, even the top guys get a general idea, but nothing's set in stone, right? So it seems like we're building to a triple threat at Takeover, wherever it would have been that year. Tampa, maybe? Yeah. Tampa Bay, the WrestleMania Takeover, which back then was on
par. Planned for Tampa.
It was on par with one of the top Takeovers. I think SummerSlam was maybe the top, but which SummerSlam that year was supposed to be in Boston too, so that would have been awesome. But that didn't happen. So I have all this brand new gear for it, which no one's ever seen, right? I released a few pictures of it, but it's all sitting in my basement, just this beautiful, like $2,000 worth of gear that says Dijakovic. It's got a big, it's modeled after, who is the emperor guy from Gladiator?
Oh, I didn't watch. I know who you mean, but I didn't watch the movie.
His character, yeah, he's whatever his name was, but he has this like white thing, like this leather white suit of armor that just looks awesome. And I have all of that for like entrance gear, and it's beautiful, and it cost me a fortune. I never used it because I didn't have a time to use it. because Takeover got canceled and shifted to USA Network.
Oh yeah,
catastrophe. So yeah, COVID hits, disrupts everything. I start getting, I'm trying to remember again because this was 4 years ago, but I start getting like a nobody like told me, but I started getting like a feel, like people started talking to me more like I was like a in the past as opposed to the future, if that makes sense. Yes. I started to feel like more of an accessory in NXT. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like the, you know, the people involved in the creative department and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh, I wonder if the plan was to do something at Takeover and that got shifted. And maybe the, because usually guys got called up in the Raw after WrestleMania. That used to be like kind of when it would happen. Not so much anymore. Now we do it. I mean, that's a whole new story, but now it's more in the draft and stuff like that. But back then it used to kind of happen after the Raw after WrestleMania. So I thought maybe there was something happening around then, but the whole timeline was screwed up and shifted around. Again, all of Raw is now at the PC for some reason, and like there's no crowd. And it's just very odd. Long story short of that portion, I get notified maybe a little bit before or after I wrestled Johnny Gargano. Gargano had just started being a heel with Candace. Maybe they had formed The Way or like the Bare Bones of The Way or something, but I was the first guy he wrestled as a heel in that run. So this was me turning babyface basically, because I had some back and forth, but ultimately this was my first like really solid babyface run. But yeah, I got notified at some point in that window that I was getting called up to Raw. And I was like, oh, great, this is wonderful. It sort of never really happened because I started going to, and again, this is such a period of confusion in WWE.
You didn't wrestle for like on NXT for a couple months after that.
Yeah, there was like a couple
2.5 months.
Yeah, there was a couple month window there, which is funny in hindsight. It feels very much like what I just went through. Whenever I get called up, it's just a fucking catastrophe for some reason. Everybody's heads just start spinning. Like, oh my God. So I got called. I remember I got called back to NXT. Even though I'd been called up and I had like shown up to Raw, but it was weird because we were already showing up to Raw because we became the fans at some point. Like NXT talent were the fans in the crowd, but we're like off camera. And then there's this weird mixed message. And Heyman was writing the show for like a week, but then he got fired and Bruce came in. It was just so, everything was so jumbled and weird. It was like, I didn't know who the fuck to go to talk to anyone. I'm like, I was told I got called up, but no one's approaching me with anything. I'm not even like in the locker room. Like, I don't know what's going on. So finally I get a call that's like, hey, we're going to bring you back to do a couple matches and face Cross, who they're building up to face Keith. And we want to introduce you with the Keith storyline because Keith is going to win the championship. So I think that was my first time back, was when Keith won the championship and I gave him a hug afterwards. And then we ran the program with Cross and Cross killed me off. And then again, now I'm back on Raw in some capacity, sort of, or maybe I never left Raw. I don't remember. It's very unclear, but I know that we're going to Raw. Like we're physically there because we're like in these tents outside and then we go in and they have us sit there and it's this whole production where Kevin Dunn's yelling at everyone in the ring. And it's just a silly mess through no fault of WWE's, right? They're just trying to survive COVID. So like, I don't think that they did like a horrific job at that. Like they maintained a product when most things just stopped, right? Like most things didn't exist, for better or worse, in terms of, you know, your views on COVID and spreading COVID, which, by the way, everybody in WWE got COVID.
Yeah, oh, I remember. I certainly remember
COVID. So that was a catastrophe. We had to get tested every fucking way. It was just such a nightmare. Such a nightmare. But also unique and fun in a lot of aspects. So finally, I go straight. I'm like, I don't know what my status is. So I go straight to Vince. First impression with Vince is horrible.
Oh no.
Because the PC is in this weird, I don't know if anyone's familiar with the layout of the current PC, but basically
probably not.
So like the building that you see on NXT, that's the old PC, what they now call the NXT Arena. That ring that you're seeing on television, that used to be the middle ring of all those rings that were around. Okay. So those old pictures you used to see of the old PC with the weight room in the background. The weight room is basically the gorilla position now, and then the arena is that middle area where we used to train.
Did they build onto it? Did they expand it, or did they just remodel it?
Remodeled, totally remodeled. Okay. Yeah, it's exact same size, exact same building. It's just different now, just totally different. And all of that happened while I wasn't there. So I just left and came back, and it was just completely different, which was kind of freaky. But during the pandemic time, they did like a makeshift model of what the current NXT arena is, and it was like kind of bare bones and looked real shitty, but it had a bunch of lights and stuff. So that area was where we were running TV, but the production of everything was over in the other building that's adjacent to it that I think they were just renting at the time, but now they own it because now that's the training facility. But at the time, it wasn't a training facility. It was just a big empty warehouse that they were renting with a bunch of separate rooms. And Vince's office, for whatever reason, was like five rooms down. So you had to like, breach these levels of warehouse to get to him. And like, you'd go through like the SmackDown set, and then you go through like the production meeting, and then you go through, and finally it was like going from like boss to boss to boss. And finally, like his security guard's standing at one door. I'm like, is Vince in there? And he's like, yes. So I'm like, can I go talk to him? And he's like, yeah. So I'm opening these doors, and I don't know what's on the other side of these doors. So like, I'm opening a door because, again, this is a facility that I'm not familiar with because it was just someone else's facility that happened to be near the PC for a long time. So I'm opening this door, and I don't know what's behind it. I'm like, maybe it's Vince like sitting at a desk, like, and I open it, and it's like a production meeting, and it's like a bunch of writers, and they all stop and look at me. And Vince is talking to Jason Jordan. I'm just standing there in the doorway, and I'm like, oh fuck. Because I'm clearly interrupting something, and I didn't know. So now I'm just standing in the doorway waiting for them to finish. And they talked for what felt like a half hour, but was probably more like 8 minutes.
Yes. But
I'm standing there awkwardly forever. Finally, he finishes. He like looks at me and like smiles and waves, and I walk over. I introduce myself to him. I'm like, hey, it's nice to meet you. My name's, I don't remember what I said, but I'm Dominik Dijakovic on NXT. I've been told that I'm called up. I just want to know if there's anything that you're looking for specifically. And his response was like, have you talked to Bruce Pritchard? And I was like, yeah, I've talked to Bruce. And he's like, okay, well, he does the creative stuff. And I was like, okay, good. And from that moment, I was like, okay, I'm fucked because he doesn't know who I am. He doesn't give a shit. Because like at that point, right, if you were on NXT, like there was a pretty clear idea if Vince knew who you were or not. And that pretty much dictated how your main roster run was going to go. And I was like, okay, I'm fucked. So, and through the grapevine, I heard that he was not happy with that at all. He didn't like that I came into him and I approached him.
Really?
Yeah. I was wearing like cat, because they told us to wear like casual stuff as we were fans.
Yes.
So I was wearing like a tank top or whatever. So I guess he wanted me in like a suit and to call him sir and whatever. But then he had a talk with me a month later. Hilarious talk in hindsight about professionalism and and speaking to oh my God, it's such a fever dream. I'm skipping ahead. Retribution debuts. It's a catastrophe. It's a bunch of writers or extras or small little people throwing things and going,
A man waddled towards the camera at once. And he's like, you better watch out.
Absolutely horrible. But I viewed it as an opportunity. I said, okay, I can fix this. I can make Retribution a fucking awesome thing.
Yes.
So I go to Vince. I film my own pitch where I have like my own mask that I made that kind of looks like the T-Bar mask, but not really.
Yes.
And it was meant to be an entrance mask. So I film the pitch where I'm talking like this, and I take the mask off and I'm cutting this promo and it's all dark and lit and stuff like that. And I take that video in. This is now my second time meeting Vince. It's like a month later. I take it in to show it to him. I'm like, this is what I think Retribution could be. I had a list. I wrote up a list of like names. Like I think like Nikki Cross was on there. Damo was on there. A lot of the people who ended up in Retribution were on there. It was like Brennan was in there, or Mason D. Madden was in there. Shane Thorne was on there. I think I put Tommaso Ciampa. I just listed like seven or eight people who I thought would fit this kind of like, we're angry at the company and we want to take them out sort of revolution type group. And I said, here's who I think would fit in this group. I think this is the vibe. I think this is the theme. And he watched the video and he had basically no feedback for any of that. But he gave me a 5 minute, he gave me a 5 minute talk on like professionalism and like talking to people who own companies. He's like, you need to be more professional. You need to present yourself better. You need to do this. He's like, not me. I'm one of the boys. But I'm like, okay, clearly you're referring to you. Like this is what, but that's just kind of how Vince operated. He operated in this weird bubble where like,
he certainly did.
He had a view of himself that was not the view that he projected. And it was just all very surreal. So I present it and I'm like, all right, that fucked. No, he doesn't care. but then 2 weeks later, it kind of starts to happen. And like Mason shows up in the group as a hooded character. And then another person I pitched shows up as a hooded character. And then I show up as a hooded character. And I'm like, oh, I think he kind of maybe listened, or somebody listened to this pitch in some capacity. Because I think I sent it to Bruce and the Raw team and whoever as well. So it kind of starts to happen. I'm like, oh shit, this is awesome. We're all getting called up and we all there. Cause at this point there's kind of a focus on Retribution. Like it's like the lights go out and Randy Orton punt kicks Ric Flair. And it's like, it's integrated in the whole program. I know a lot of people weren't watching or hated watching during the pandemic they had very good reason to do so. But at that point, it's a focal point of Monday Night Raw. And it's like, oh shit, this is becoming a thing. And then the more we do it, the more steam it gets. People are starting, because originally it started and they were like, everyone looks like a child, you know, screaming and throwing a temper tantrum. But the more that we did it, the more actual pro wrestlers did it. And now me and Mace are next to each other and we're big and imposing in these ski masks. And we got Shane in there and he looks good and everybody's hitting each other hard. And the segments are actually going well. Like we beat up Dominic Mysterio, we beat up Keith, we beat up Drew, we beat up Braun, we beat up, you know, there was a bunch of weeks in a row where it was like, this is going really well. We're on Raw and SmackDown. And then suddenly it's like, boom, and it falls off a cliff because they're like, you guys can't be on SmackDown anymore. And I don't think anyone told us, but we heard that it was because Fox didn't like it. Yeah. And that's when it was like, boom, this fell off a cliff. And it was before we had like officially debuted. So we're like, oh, we're screwed. They can just trash the whole thing. Cause like no one's seen our faces, no nothing, no anything.
How far into that? Like by the time that we saw the first people waddling on screen, did you know you were going to be in Retribution or did that come after?
No,
man.
No, nobody knew. The first time you saw them on screen when they threw Molotov cocktails at the generator, I don't even think I was officially on Raw. I was like in a middle ground, but I don't even think I.
Sure.
I saw it as an opportunity because I was in this meandering middle ground where it was like, they don't know how to use me. They have no plan for me. I see this faction. I'm like, I have friends who I like who are very talented and in a similar boat. I'm just going to go for it and say, hey, I don't think you have a plan for this. Let me give you a plan. And it kind of started to work.
So, yeah. So you presenting that, you didn't think that like they had considered you for it. You were just kind of throwing your hat in the ring.
Oh, I'm 1,000% sure that they had not considered me for it. I don't think they'd considered anyone. I don't think there was a plan at all.
It's nuts. That's so nuts.
Watching the program, you can reasonably discern that they didn't have a plan.
Of course.
It was literally just like writers and extras and nonsense.
And yeah, based on everything I had heard about it, it was very hasty. Like,
yeah,
the way the story was told to me was after that call, he had a meeting at some point and said, come up with something, let's do it. And then they hastily put it together for, I guess, the next week, I think it was.
It might have been the next day.
It could have been.
It was very fast. Because they didn't even talk about it until like 3 p.m. that day when they're like, a new group is debuting on Monday Night Raw and they call themselves Retribution. I'm like, why would they send a press release? Like, that's very odd for a bunch of...
None of it made sense. Why would they hire these people?
No, it made zero sense. Anyway, so we're doing the thing. We're doing the masks. It's all getting better, right? It's not great, but it's getting better. It's trending in a good direction. And we're pitching stuff like crazy. Like I think I pitched like names. I wanted the names like big and capitalized, like Dijak, Dio, because Mason was Dio Madden at the time. So just Dijak, just Dio, just Thorn, like these one name, big capital letter, impactful things. We wear these entrance masks because the company has betrayed us, right? Karrion Kross killed me off. I'm angry at the company. This guy got betrayed by his tag partner. This guy got, you know, we all had these reasons and this motivation. We presented all of this. And then just one day, just like a big fucking hammer, it just came down and it was like, boom, here's your masks. Oh, cool. Are they entrance masks? Nope. You wear them all the time. Oh, shit. Okay. Maybe we can make that work. Your name's going to be T-Bar. Your name's going to be Slapjack. Your name's going to be Mace, and we're like, fuck.
So all of you knew these suck, I assume.
He wants you to paint your face and do all this stuff, and we're like, fuck. You know, it's like, and in the back of our heads, we're like, okay, at least it's us, right? Because at this point, we don't have main roster contracts. And, sure. And this is at a point in WWE history where you can just, where Vince can just go, bah, fuck him, fire him. And just like, it didn't work, fire him. And that happened all the time. So like our jobs are on the line now. So we're like, okay, at least it's still being pushed. At least it's our faces are out now. So they can't just replace us. Also, while this is happening, or a little bit after this happened, so our faces are out. So we're like, good. Now they have to use us. They have to give us these contracts. Even if it's terrible and we know it's terrible, and the names are terrible and all this stuff is terrible. And they want us talking like this with the voice changers and blah, 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 blah. Even though we know it's all bad, it's like at least we're here and we're gonna get pushed, and it's fake fighting, it's pretend nonsense. So we can, if you push us, it will get over no matter what, right? If you can do the silliest shit in the world, but if it gets pushed and you throw a bunch of championships on it, people will be like, hey, that's the cool thing now. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Obviously that didn't happen.
I will say you guys did like a shockingly, alarmingly high number of YouTube views for everything that you all did. Like, we keep track of those. Yes. And like, if you go back and you look, there were a lot of Retribution segments that were getting like 10 million YouTube views.
Huge.
It was insane. Like, yeah. And then when they brought Ali in, they bumped up again. Like, yep. The numbers were visually really crazy.
Visually, it was just always so crazy because you put a thumbnail on YouTube and it'd be like, 20 ski mask guys surrounding Braun Strowman as he stands there, and that would get like
40 million
views or whatever. And then once we debuted with the masks, like people just scrolling on YouTube are like, the fuck is this? And they'd click on it. And obviously, unanimously, it was despised, right? Like everybody hated it. But it was just it was at a time where that sort of fade or that transition from like news outlets wanting to report genuine news into like, let's just say whatever the fuck we want because people will just comment endlessly under it and it'll just gain interaction. So it started to get a lot of that.
And did they ever approach you all and be like, hey, these are doing pretty crazy numbers digitally for us?
No.
So that's like something you all just discover your own. Cause like,
I'm
looking right now, like segments that you got or the Retribution had with Hurt Business, Drew and Keith Lee, Alexa and Fiend, of course, Mustafa Ali, Braun Strowman, Like all these are like insane levels of numbers. Like I encourage people to go back and look because
the
it's just so wild the level of traffic they did.
We talk about this routinely because I'm still friends with all those people. I've talked to literally all of them today.
Sorry to hear that.
including Ali. We talk about routinely how, with the exception of Ali, the rest of us are mostly our biggest impact on the world in terms of just like anything. Is that stuff like that's the most that anyone's ever seen us as a entity on Earth, and no one will ever know it was us. They'll never know it was us, and they'll never give a shit that it was us. And it's unanimously despised. But it's just funny that like millions and millions and millions of people saw that and just like laughed at it and moved on with their lives because it's such a fleeting, unimpactful thing. So those numbers and stuff became part of my pitch to Vince at that point, because he was doing a lot of the contract, he got the final say on contracts and stuff.
Yeah.
So because they brought us all, this is a whole nother thing. And I don't want to talk too much about like money and details of what the structures were of contracts at that time. But long story short, they were trying to bring me specifically up into a contract situation that didn't make sense because there was a lack of communication between talent relation departments at that point. I think it's a lot better now. Not perfect, but it's a lot better now. But at that point, there was a real lack of internal communication. And I was trying to explain that to them, and they didn't like that. They did not like that I was doing that. And there was some, I wouldn't call them threats, but I was strongly encouraged to stop doing that. Not direct, indirectly. Through booking decisions, through meetings that I was a part of, through other people who were being brought to television as potential replacements. None of this was told directly to me, but it was all made apparent to me that like, you need to shut your mouth and accept what we're giving you or you're out of here. Again, that wasn't said to me, but the general tone of that was very much felt on my part. I was very much pressured into signing a contract that I wasn't terribly comfortable signing.
One of the rumors I had heard back then is basically they had you all sign identical contracts on the same day. I don't know how true that is. It's not something I could ever run with. It was just
not all of us, but most of us. Yes.
Okay.
And it, I'd, it was an uncomfortable situation. I can't speak to the legality of it because I don't know, but it felt uncomfortable. And there was booking decisions on the same day where you can go back and watch me. It's like our first or second match, and I get put in the fucking Hurt Lock right away, and I'm tapping out, and all of that was for a reason. So ultimately, we thought we got it resolved. The contracts were signed. It is what it is. I don't remember the timing of it, but maybe Ali joined us after that. We started to trend in the right direction again, but then it just fell off a fucking cliff and we just started to lose to everybody and it was a catastrophe. And
was that another abrupt thing, or did they know early on that Ali would be involved, or is that something you all are told like as it progresses?
They didn't know. He found out, he found out that day.
So the hacker, he found out when the hacker stuff happened or after the hacker stuff had been promoted?
This is way after hacker.
Oh my God.
Way after hacker.
So he had no idea that those were designed for him.
That what was designed for him?
Like, I think they did like little vignettes and things like that and little like social posts where they had implied, you know, that the hacker was there, something like that. I believe that they,
yeah, that was all after he'd already joined at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, we did all of that after. I want to make something clear. Everybody who was involved in Retribution, with the exception of Mercedes, because she was only there for 2 weeks, because she was like, fuck this, I don't want to be part of this. Everybody else who was involved in Retribution put their fucking heart and soul into making that presentable, because what they would give us every week was the most atrocious thing you would ever see in your life. What you saw on TV was so much better than what we were given. And that's not me pretending it was good, because it was not good. It was very bad. But we took it from like inexplicably horrible to just bad. Yes. And we worked our asses off to make that happen. Like Ali would go endlessly into Vince's office and pitch like, please don't do this. This is going to get us canceled. This is going to get us fired. We're going to look horrible. We'll still lose, but please let us lose this way. Don't do that. Don't, you know, it was just every week was a fucking battle. It was a fight for our lives, because we knew that we were one step away from just being just obliterated off the face of the earth. And everyone in that group is a fucking excellent wrestler.
Everybody's really entertaining and really good.
Let us be ourselves. Just let us wrestle. Just give us time. Just let us create this. Let us fix what you've screwed up. And they just would not. Everything just would get run by Vince and be like, no, that's, you know, and he would just have a fucking problem with everything. And it was just, it was fun because I was around my friends and it was a new experience and we were on the main roster and we were on Monday Night Raw and people are talking about us, but it was super negative because going to work was just treacherous. At that point, you don't have fans. So our only feedback is Twitter, and Twitter's just fucking eviscerating us.
Of course.
Just eating us alive. Every time we're on TV, we're trending number one, but it's for all the wrong reasons. It's just people just endlessly shitting on me. And I'll admit, I was in a dark place, like men, I think we all were at that time, right? It's like the middle of or the end of 2020, so we're all in this fucking fatigue where it's like the world doesn't exist. We're all in this dark hole. I'm living on Twitter, right? Because it's the only feedback I'm getting from my job. My name is T-Bar. I'm supposed to be this anarchist character. I'm trying to make it interesting, so I'm just shooting on everyone and just saying nonsense and just. There's plenty of like regrettable things I said that were like in character, but sort of not. And it's just a complete mess. A decent amount of regrets from that overall. It was a lot of fun to be around my friends and to be in the Thunderdome, which was a unique experience in its own right. But yeah, it was wild. It was a wild experience. I'll tell you the most fun part of the Thunderdome was not being T-Bar, but it was the fact that in Amway especially, and then in the, because we did it in four places. Tropicana not so much, but the two small arenas after that was some of the coolest experiences of not only my life, but I think like in the history of television, or in the history of WWE, I'll say, because what we got to experience was so cool in that it was just a big empty arena filming Monday Night Raw. And as talent, we would finish our segment or whatever, which in its own right was unique. It's unique because you're wrestling in front of these screens and it's like, you know, it's like this futuristic fucking weird thing. But then even cooler than that would be like, we'd finish and we'd go to catering or whatever, and we'd take our food and we'd go sit up in the nosebleed seats in a huge empty arena and just watch, just from the hard cam point of view, just watch Monday Night Raw as a fan for only us. And to me, that was like the coolest thing as a fan of wrestling, is like, wow, I'm getting like my own personal Monday Night Raw and I'm the only one in this arena watching it. And it's like, everyone's just doing the show just for us, like sitting here watching the show. Like as a fan, it was probably the coolest thing you could ever experience, because it was just like, it would be like if you were a trillionaire and you could just rent WWE for yourself.
Yes.
But I had that experience. And I was like, and I remember sitting there and having these thoughts actively, like, this will never happen again. And this is like one of the coolest things ever. So that was a personal highlight for me. But yeah, the actual product itself was not so much.
So I guess we can move on past Retribution. I am the person who watches Main Event. I'm the guy. I'm
the one. It's you. You're the guy.
I'm the guy. I've watched every episode.
You must love me.
You became, I said, the best 5 to 8 minute wrestler in the world. You were there on it for like a year. And there's actually a lot of fun stuff that I'm sure a lot of people didn't discover. Like you would randomly be teaming with like Shelton Benjamin 1 week, or Akira yeah. Tozawa, yeah. or like you're wrestling Reggie, who people had never seen work a 6 minute match before.
Yep.
And then it'd be like Ciampa or Apollo or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you all would fit some kind of cool things into those matches.
Yes.
During that period, how were you feeling? Because occasionally you'd be put in a battle royal, or they'd have you get crushed by Omos, but you were working these main event matches almost weekly at that point.
Yep.
Was there any concern, or like how did you feel?
It was a dichotomy of feelings, right? Most of my, so on a personal level, I was, my kids were young and I got to spend a lot of time with them because I'm not on house shows. I'm not on pay-per-views. I'm not, I just, and like a third of the Raws I don't even get flown out to because they can't have me on main event every single week. So it'd be like two or three in a row and then you're off two or three. So really I'm working like 5 days a month or whatever it happened, whatever.
Sure.
So I'm spending a lot of time at home with my kids. So I'm super happy about that on a personal level because my daughter's a baby at the time. My son's only 4 years old. So I'm super happy that I get to watch my kids grow up. That being said, professionally, I'm in a very dark place because I'm desperately trying everything. I'm pitching to writers. I'm pitching to Bruce. I'm pitching to Vince. I'm trying everything in the world. I'm like, please, I'm doing binders. I'm doing videos. I'm doing this. I'm trying everything in the world. And you just get stuck in this rut at WWE where it's like, we'll get to him later. We'll get to him later. We'll get to him later. And they go, oh, he's here again to pitch his thing. He's here to pitch, you know? And it's like, it starts to eat at you. And this is at a time when, you know, releases happen, right? Pretty frequently. So every sure. 6 months, there's like a conference call or whatever. And it's like, well, here's the conference call. Yep. 2 days later, here they come. And it's funny because we all start following you because you become the way that we find out, right?
They don't announce them publicly anymore.
No.
Occasionally I know they would send you guys like a talent relations memo or something. Then that stopped.
That would come after though. They would send they would fire everybody and then they'd send us a list and be like, here's everybody who fired. And we'd be like, yeah, we know we follow Sean on Twitter.
Yeah. And it was a thing where one of the times I realized that I found out before some of the talent did. And I felt like real gross about that. Like, yeah. And I had a wrestler say,
you shouldn't feel gross. They should feel gross.
It's
one of the most horrific business practices I've ever witnessed. And I haven't been in a lot of businesses, right? But I will always be publicly outspoken about this. And they might still do this. They haven't done a round of releases in a long time, but I think the last one was probably Mason Mansoor, right? Weren't they in that round of releases?
I think last year with Ali and
they still do this, so I will be very outspoken about this until it gets fixed. That's not how this should be done. Should absolutely 100% not be how this should be done.
They had the ones in April, Wagner and Zion and Jinder.
They need all them, to figure out a way to contact everybody all at once and let everybody know all at once that this is happening, because we should not be put through this thing where you see one name come out and it's like, oh, Mustafa Ali has been released. And then we all go, okay, I know that he asked for his release and maybe they're doing that thing. So I text him. I'm like, hey man, I'm sorry. I'm like, And he texts me back. He's like, yep, I think there's more coming. And I'm like, oh no. And then, because even though I'm in a decent spot at that time in NXT, like they can just fucking fire anyone. And it's not out of the realm of possibility that a guy from the main roster gets sent down to NXT and then inexplicably released. That's happened many, many times. It was a major concern of mine. So you're just watching people drop like flies. Like, there goes Von Wagner. There goes, he was just on TV last week. He was just, and I'm like, fuck, you know? So, and it's like, why do they have to do it like that? They don't. The answer is they don't. The answer is they don't have a better way to do it. And it's, it wouldn't take that much thought to come up with a better way to do it.
Especially with the access to the Talent Relations app, which is supposed to be pretty uniform in getting messages to talent in any situation.
There has to be a better way to do it. But these days where we all, because I went through 15 of them, and some were worse than others. Some yeah. of them, like the last one, wasn't so bad because I was on. But also keep in mind, Ali was announced for a premium live event and then released.
He was planned to win the NXT North American Championship. He had gear made.
So I'm watching this and I'm like, oh no, like I feel secure, but like I bet he felt secure. He was announced for a premium live event. Like
he wanted to leave and they didn't let him.
Right. So like that one felt concerning, but not nearly as concerning as the round of releases, like where the one where Shane got released. That was the one. That was the one where I was in this room that I'm in right now, and my wife can see it on my face. She's like, what's happening? And I'm looking at my phone, and I'm like, it makes me upset thinking about it right now because I'm looking at my phone. Shane's texting me. He's telling me he got released, and I'm looking at my...
Anywhere worth going is worth going in good boots, and you can find your perfect pair at Tecovas. Tecovas crafts quality Western boots for everyone, from generational ranchers and lifelong cowboys to first-time boot buyers, which is what I was up until a couple of years ago. Growing up in Kentucky, you see boots everywhere, but I never jumped into the game until I found Tecovas, and I love it. Every one of Tecovas boots are handcrafted with over 200 meticulous steps for broken-in comfort right out of the box. Whether it's a long day or a big night, your Tecovas are built to last and impress. That's why Esquire loves them and says they're the reason we keep coming back to Tecovas. They are so comfortable. Plus, with Tecovas Best in the West guarantee, you get free returns and exchanges for 30 days. And right now, get 10% off at tecovas.com/SRS when you sign up for email and text. That's 10% off at tecovas.com/SRS. That's tecovas.com/SRS. See site for details. Tecovas, point your toes west.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh, my name's T-Bar, right? I'm on main event. I can't get off main event. I'm like, surely I'm at the top of this list, right? I have no credibility at this point. No one's seen me on TV. I've just been T-Bar, been a joke for 2 years. So I'm just staring at my phone. My wife can see on my face. I'm starting to cry because I think I'm about to get fired and I don't have a backup plan. I don't think I'm going to be, it wouldn't have been what today is for me. Right now I'm in a great spot. I'm super lucky and super thankful that I ended up with the run that I got. Back then, I would have been fucked badly. Shane is still recovering. Like, this is one of my best friends. I'm texting him right now. We talk every day. He's still recovering from what they did to him. It was a mogging. It was bad. Yeah. He was fucking ripped out of his tag team, made Slapjack, which is somehow a bigger joke than T-Bar, and then just fucking cast aside on, maybe worse than that, just off TV for like a year, and then just released. So
I would
at that point
I would hear like, oh, he's been quietly moved to this other brand, And then I would reach out and they're like, we don't know. We don't have any idea what they're doing with them. It's, and I mean, and during that period, especially when you were there, nobody was safe. Like,
no.
Cardona got fired. Rusev got fired. No. I think like when Braun got fired, I was like, what is Vince looking for? What exactly is it that he's looking for?
So a lot of the, so what you do is you're watching the names come out. I want, you know, we're all refreshing. We're all on your Twitter page. Just refresh. This is what we all do because we don't have another source. Cause we see one name and we go, oh no, today's the day. And then we all just go to your Twitter page and start refreshing, just waiting for our name to pop up because you might find out before us. We're looking at that. And then while we're doing that, we're looking at our phone, just waiting for the 203 number to pop up because that means you're fucked. So we're just, that's what our day becomes.
To me, that's bad as well. When I find out the first cut and like, I know that they have been informed because I never run them unless the person has been informed, but then they're actively making more and people are worried because the natural question that I get, and is it frustrating to hear? Yes, but it's a natural question. Are there more coming? Are there more coming? Whether it be talent, staff, or fans, they always want to know, are more coming? And we never have the answer to that until somebody in an official capacity in WWE tell us, yes, they are. Yeah. And a couple times, they've been wrong about that too. And there have been a couple more that, like, I think Riddle's dropped after, which who knows, maybe he was on a beach without a phone or something. Who knows with him, but like they weren't over. It's heartbreaking.
The game that we're playing in our minds, our minds are just spinning while it's happening and we're refreshing and we're looking at the thing. And the game that we're playing as all these names are popping up is why him?
Sure.
And we're talking to each other like Braun, Bray, can you believe it? And then you hear through the grapevine, it's like, oh, I heard that this guy got in an argument with Vince. I heard this guy asked for more money. I heard this guy, you know, so we're justifying it. It's like, what did I do? Did I ask for more money? Did I make a mistake? Did I look at him the wrong way?
There were definitely some of those 2019 deals they signed after AEW debuted. And all of a sudden, okay, people were talking about how much Carl Anderson and Gallows were making. They talked about Braun's new deal being seven figures. They talk about what Bray was making. Then they got cut.
Yep. So it just becomes a nightmare. And there's got to be, I don't have the answer of what the better way is, but there has to be a better way where everyone gets notified all at once. Maybe it's an automated system where everyone gets called with a message and whatever. I don't care what it is. It's better than just we find out one name and then we have to sit and wait for a phone call. It's ridiculous. That's
well, dare I say that them informing a guy a couple days before his deal expires that they will not be re-signing him is also not a good way because I can tell you
a couple is unfair. I had a little more notice than that. I was not told today that they wouldn't be renewing.
Sure.
But it wasn't that long ago either.
When were you told? And how does that go? I know that there has been a talent relations shakeup there.
I don't want to get specific into the dates, but it was not that long ago.
Okay.
I was for one reason or another, I was told not to get into the specifics of the dates. I don't know whether it matters or not.
Okay.
It was somewhat recently. Let's put it this way. I've been trying to negotiate with WWE because when I started, and even as recently as, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, contracts were renegotiated years in advance.
Yep.
I've had probably five or six contracts with WWE. This right now, because I'm still under contract, right now is the deepest into a contract by 2 years that I've ever gotten.
And
the closest I ever got on another deal before it was renewed was 2 years out.
And I don't want to, I mean, I feel like that may be the reason the prior talent relations guy got the boot, because I know that, I mean, Natalya is up in a few days and Becky Lynch's deal was allowed to be up, but she wanted to take time off.
Well, I'll tell you this one. That's the rumor. And I can tell you unequivocally, just from my own anecdotal evidence, that they can say that, but that's not the reason that Dan got fired. Because if that was the reason that Dan got fired, then they got to fire the two new guys because they're doing the exact same thing. They did it to me.
Sure.
Right. Well, and, I mean, that's the facts.
So yeah, I know that.
So they might have Priest, that, but that can't be
sure. I don't think they ever claimed that. It's just something that many people deduced because, again, they were done so far ahead. Like, I remember when people were like, oh, my God, they fired Cardona and Rusev. And I was like, well, they offered them new deals and they didn't take the new deals. That's why they got fired, because their 90 days had, like, it was almost a formality firing, like a public showing, because their 90 days were up like a few days up before their contract was anyway. So there was no purpose. But you do not have a 90-day as yours expires. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, I can do whatever I want on Saturday.
And how do you feel about that? Because I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh, my God, those are gross. I know a lot of people that are like, no, I like hanging out with my family for 90 days, getting in good shape, and getting paid.
It's a double-edged sword, for sure. The pros are I can do what I did today, if you're watching this tomorrow, I guess yesterday, but which is save everything for a couple days in advance and say, hey, I'm free tomorrow. And then everyone goes, oh, shit, tomorrow. And then all of a sudden, I'm the fun new toy right away. Whereas other people, they're like, this guy's been released. They make their fun, cool video, and then everyone has to wait 3 months to book them or anything. So that's the pro. It's a big pro. I'll be honest. That's a big pro. I was on WWE programming 7 to 8 days ago.
Yeah.
On speed, which is like, haha, speed, whatever. Still viewed by 2.3 million people. I looked at the numbers.
And now you can go to Uganda tomorrow if you want.
I was the pinned tweet for WWE yesterday.
So...
Tweet. I thought that was hilarious. I was the pinned tweet.
I'm trying to figure out a way to ask this in which you can maybe appropriately answer that.
Sure.
So, I mean, if you found out, I presume you found out before yesterday. So you were still the pinned tweet yesterday. So you knew while they were still actively promoting that, that you were no longer going to be in the company.
Yes. God. I mean, there's your window right there. If you have any sense at all, you can kind of figure out.
Yeah. One of
7 days that it was, because I found out after I wrestled Xavier Woods, obviously, maybe not obviously, because I probably would have done it regardless, but I'll just state that as fact. I found out after I wrestled Xavier Woods, but I found out before everybody publicly advertised that match and it got posted and everything. So that
poses the question. Why the fuck did you get drafted to Raw?
And that's an excellent question that no one's given me an answer to. And I've asked it, but no one's given me an answer to it. My brain, again, this is the whole thing that I was just alluding to. Why is this happening? And you can roll it X 10, 12, 14 reasons. I've been in WWE long enough where I know generally how things operate and how things take place. My gut feeling is they knew, they had a general idea of when my contract was. I mean, they made the contract, so somebody in some capacity knows when my contract is up. I don't know whether the decision makers have that date in front of them or whatever. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. I think they were generally aware of when my time was coming up. My guess would be that these decisions were likely made in some capacity before I even went to NXT. Mm-hmm. I think somebody likely looked, maybe not somebody, but I think a group of individuals likely looked at me as a whole and said, okay, here's T-Bar. He's up in June of 2024. Do we release him now? Or do we try to get as much out of this contract as we possibly can? And I think the conclusion, thankfully, on my part, the conclusion was, let's put him in NXT and see what he can do there.
Of course, you had some of the greatest matches of your career there. And now anybody that might have that doubt, did Retribution ruin this guy permanently, can now look and say, no, exactly. It didn't.
nobody's more thankful for that than me. I've been super public. I've thanked Hunter. I've thanked Sean publicly and privately, both of them, number of times. Thank you so much. This saved my career, because it did. And I'm still thankful for that. That being said, it's disheartening to, and I don't know this to be fact, but my gut tells me that no matter what I did, the decision had already been made. Okay. And that's because I didn't feel that way when I was in NXT. In NXT, I was like, fuck yes, this is my chance. I'm going to fucking out-wrestle everybody. I'm the best wrestler in the world. I know I can. I'm losing. I don't care. I'll lose every fucking match. It doesn't matter. They did me a huge favor. I'm going to put these guys over huge. I'm gonna have their best matches. I'm going to have everybody's best match, every premium live event, every match. I don't care if it's 2 minutes on TV. Luca Crucifino, Trey Bearhill. I'll give all these guys. I'm going to do everything in my fucking power to have the best matches possible, to show them. I'm going to prove to them that I'm the fucking best and that I deserve this opportunity. And in my head, I was like, every time I went out there, I was like, yes, you fucking nailed it. You fucking nailed it. Every time. As recently as 2 months ago at Stand Delivery. Yes. Biggest show of my life. I fucking nailed it. I got a fucking great triple threats are fucking hard as hell. And Obafemi has like three matches. It was
unbelievable match.
I'm like, yes, I fucking nailed it. Everybody was watching. Everybody saw that. Everyone was watching. It's WrestleMania weekend. Everybody saw this. Boom, the draft is coming up. Everything's fucking working out. Yes. And then I'm sitting there during the draft. And the draft is a shoot, right? Nobody knows what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there during the draft and I'm watching like the names and stuff. And there's like the angel and demon on my shoulder, right? Because part of me is sitting there all grumpy because like I thought it would be funny and I'm like in character. And it's like, why would I stand and applaud for, I would die-jack the assassin standing. So that part of it was funny. But like also internally in like a shoot, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, you've been told that there are plans for you to be in the main event picture with Trick Williams for the NXT championship. Also, your contract is up in a month or so, give or take. So there's this argument going on in my head. I'm like, do you want to stay in NXT with Trick and have this cool feud? And will they renew you if you're in NXT? That'll be weird. That'll be an awkward conversation because you're on a main roster contract still. So it's this weird, weird middle ground. And then I'm watching the names get listed off. And it's like, as they keep going, I'm like, uh-oh. Because in the back of my head, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, the further this goes, the more likely I am to be a supplemental draft. And if I'm supplemental draft, I'm fucked. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care who has my back. I don't care who does what. If I'm supplemental draft, that means they've made up their mind and I'm fucked. So,
as there is a track record on people in the supplemental draft being fucked,
it just means they don't care. We don't care. You're on. We don't care. That's what it means.
Odyssey Jones still can't get on TV. Exactly. He's been drafted twice.
Exactly. Von Wagner drafted and then back on it. It means
Zion as well. Yeah.
It means they don't care. That's what it is. So I'm watching this and I'm watching the names. Name. Finally, I think they get to the last name and I'm like, okay, maybe if it's just on TV, it's salvaged. And they're like, the last name from NXT, I think the last one was Blair Davenport maybe. And so her name comes up. Everyone's clapping and applauding. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, please just be still on NXT. Please be still on NXT. Please be still on NXT. And then whatever it was, Raw or SmackDown, goes off the air. I don't remember who it was. Who was there? I don't remember, but they had someone, who's Jackie Redmond that night or so. I don't remember who was doing the announcing or interviewing or whatever, but they announced to the live crowd and to us, they're like, we have one more, and I know that it's off the air, and they're like, we have one more announcement. And the second I heard those words, everything clicked together for me. And
oh my God,
my brain just connected all the dots. And I go, I am so screwed right now. I'm so fucking screwed. I even texted my wife I might have texted my wife or maybe my friends or maybe all of them and said something to the effect of, because it was funny, I was texting the whole night. I was like, I had Taco Bell, I have to go to bed. You know, I'm live tweeting everyone. And I'm texting everyone and I'm saying, I think I'm completely screwed right now. Because I'm connecting all these dots. I'm going, my contract is 1 month. They're going to call me up in the supplemental draft. That means they don't have anything for me. That means I'm going to come down to the wire. That means they're going to either try to bend me over the barrel or just fire me altogether. And I'm just connecting all these dots. Meanwhile, there's cameras on me and I have to play pretend like I'm all fucking happy and stuff, which in a sense I am, because yeah, it's cool that you're all cheering for me and all my friends are supporting me and Sean's there. And I'm like, none of these people know what I know. And maybe they did, I don't know, but certainly not the talent. The talent are just happy. They're like, yeah, because we're all friends, right? And these people respect me and I've been around them and I've been,
yeah.
I didn't just go to NXT, right? I went back to the Performance Center. I said, I'm going to go all in. And I don't live in Florida. I live in New Hampshire. So I'm flying down to the PC for like weeks at a time, like leaving my family.
Yeah.
So I can train with these people. So I can do class with Fit Finley. So I can do class with the younger kids and give back to them and teach them training and stuff like that. So I'm all in on this Performance Center lifestyle and NXT. And we're all friends and we're all comrades and stuff. So they're all shoot happy for me, but in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm fucked. And so, then I'm like, okay, try to stay positive. You're on Raw. Try to maybe there's a plan. Maybe there's something. So I'm going to Raw and I go to the first Raw. There's nothing on the sheet. And I'm like, oh God, I'm fucked. And you know, you start playing the game again, the WWE game where it's like, maybe it's this, maybe it's this, maybe it's this, maybe it's, maybe they're waiting for this. They're waiting for the next pay-per-view to end. And the more you try to justify, the more it goes deeper into your brain. You go, yep, you're fucked. Yep.
So I would get, you know, I get rundowns and stuff like that. And I would hear early in the day, oh yeah, Dijak's listed for this. Now he's not. That did like, and then I think it was maybe a month after the draft. It's like, have the fuel, leave the memories alone song play here. You're back on Main Event.
Yep.
And you're wrestling. I mean, that's the one positive thing. I got to watch you wrestle Pete Dunne.
There were so many levels to this descent,
yes.
Or this, where it was just like another step where it's like, oh, I know what's happening. What's happening. I remember one time I got one of the bigger daggers to me was when I got a text from my writer who had been assigned to me. Because he and I had a good conversation at like the first or second week of Raw, where it's like I pitched all this stuff and I was hearing through the grapevine, like, yeah, creative wants to use you and Hunter has this plan and he wants you on TV every week. And I'm like, okay, good. I can recover from this. I can, as long as I'm wrestling in the ring, I know I can make this work. And it was like a Saturday and I was outside playing with my kids and I got a text from my writer. I'm like, oh shit, I haven't got a text from a writer in a long time. It's like, hey, we have you on Main Event versus whoever I wrestle in Main Event. And the second I saw that, I was like, fuck. Because it's like, I know what that means. I've been here long enough and I know what that means. That's not an opportunity. That's a death sentence. And so I'm like, shit. And so then I'm working with Paragon, which is Mojo and Steven, they've been outstanding.
They're great.
Really, I don't know where I would be right now without them or where my headspace would be without them, but it would be in a bad spot right now. So I'm very thankful to have them on board. But they're super positive. And they're both
brilliant guys. Yeah,
super brilliant. And so they're staying positive. They're like, yeah, they're probably just doing this and this to you know. And then online, the discourse is like, oh, they're just waiting for him to re-sign. They want to re-sign him. They want to lock him in before he moves. And I know, well, obviously, I know I haven't got an offer yet. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And Mojo and Steve are reassuring. They're like, yeah, they do this all the time. They're just trying to get a better deal. So they're taking you down to the wire and this, that, and the other thing. And in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
And it has been remarkably common.
I'm not saying they're wrong or that they're sure. looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, but I'm like, yeah. They're wonderful human beings and they're looking out for my best interest, but I've been me for the past 7 years and I know how this company talks to people at my level and treats sure. people at my level. And I'm familiar with how that works. And I'm like, it does not feel like that, guys. It does not feel like that, guys.
And so, I mean, that leads to where we are now. And I mean, I know for a fact that a bunch of wrestling companies, independent and otherwise, are interested in you because I've had people asking, is this real? Are we allowed to contact him, et cetera. But when was the last contract you signed? You said that you had been through a few of them. When did you re-sign for this one to have expired? Was it the Retribution deal or was it subsequently?
There was a few after
okay.
the Retribution or one or two. Yeah, I don't remember the exact timeline. This deal that I'm on right now that ends tomorrow was signed in on June 28th of 2021. So exactly
okay.
tomorrow. So that would have been like in the middle of my tag run with Mace on Raw.
Was any part of you like, damn, they want to extend this shit? Let's go.
Rephrase what you mean by
so,
that.
So like when, like by then Retribution had kind of run its course already. Were you surprised or were you expecting them to be like, yeah, we're not going to.
No, I wasn't surprised because it was a mass thing. That's how they used
okay.
to do it. They used to do everybody at the same time. Like, I don't know at all. Very few names have been presented to me as other people. I would not be surprised whatsoever if there are. I don't want to say a number, but I would be shocked. I would be shocked if there's not more announcements within the next 7 days of people whose contracts have not been renewed because they basically did everybody all at the same time. So some of those people got to be coming up and I'm assuming some of them got the same treatment as me. So,
I mean, it appears Natalia is one of them. Her stuff is pretty well out there.
But. I have no idea. I honestly don't. There's obviously levels to this, right? That was at a time they were bringing a lot of people from NXT up all at the same time. So they had to redo all these contracts. She had already been on the main roster for, you know, a decade.
Yes.
So I don't know what chunk of her contract she was on at that point. I have no idea. I just know that they did a bunch of people all at the same time because it was like we'd be sitting in the locker room and TR would come and be like, hey, they want to see you. And then you'd go and they'd be like, hey, I signed a new contract. Hey. They want to see you. And, you know, we'd all go one by one and meet with whoever it was at the time. I think Carano at the time. So, yeah, that's how that took place. And, at that point, I wasn't even creatively, I wasn't super shocked because at that point we'd sort of recovered in a way because the masks were off. I was still T-Bar and he was still Mace, but our masks were off. We're tagging. So I'm tagging with one of my best friends. We're on Monday Night Raw in actual feuds and stuff. Like we feuded with like Ali and Mansoor and we're in front of a live crowd. So we're getting actual feedback. We're having actual matches and stuff. It's not quite where we want it to be, but we're at least two big guys in a tag team that look kind of Road Warrior-esque.
Of course.
Vince McMahon is calling the shots. So we're like, hey, he must love big guys who beat the shit out of people. So like we're probably in a pretty decent spot right now. And then it kind of.
Yeah.
The draft happened. We got split up and it tanked for both of us. Well, not him because he got the Maximum Male Model thing.
Yeah.
That fell off a cliff too.
Which they killed. They were so good at that. They were so good at that. And I mean, as we've seen, every ingredient involved in that thing from the original four with Maxine and LA Knight and Mace and Mansoir are all very good. It's just, man, the way that they were not propelled didn't help, but let's talk about a couple positives. The run back to NXT, when you found out that was going to happen, how did you find out that was going to happen? Was that a pitch on your behalf? Because I mean, you absolutely killed it in this run.
Thank you. No, it was not a pitch on my behalf, because at that point I was very scared, because again, I'm at a point in my career where 2 weeks prior to that, Vince McMahon was still in charge of creative.
Yeah, it's true.
And I had I might have been the last person who ever spoke to Vince in a creative aspect, because the Wednesday before the New York whatever article came out, or that it came out on like a Wednesday or a Thursday, and the Monday before that was Monday Night Raw. And I went into Vince, Tommaso was in there talking to him, and then he came out, and I wasn't on Main Event. So I went in to pitch something for him. I've told this story before, but it's fun. It's a really funny story. Not at the time, but now in hindsight, maybe not. Maybe funny is the wrong word, but it's. Let me tell it. So I walked in. It's during Main Event, because I know that during Main Event, when we're taping Main Event, in that 7:30 window, that's the best time to talk to Vince, because he's not watching fucking Main Event. He's just sitting in his office. So I walk in. And I'm like, hey, sir, I took these new, because I had a conversation with him maybe 3 or 4 months before this, where I was like, please, like, I want to be a top guy for you. I want to just tell me. And we had a good conversation about my interests, what I'm into. I told him about my criminal justice background. He said, there's something about the criminal mind that's, so I'm like, cool, great. I can get all in on this. I can do. So I did all this stuff. I put together this pitch. I wrote a backstory. I did all this stuff. I took new pictures. I have these pictures where I'm wearing kind of the trench coat and the glasses and stuff. And I have all this whole new look. I come in with this huge presentation for him, because I always did this, right? I did it just like I wrote in my little sheet, which is right here.
You have to with him. Chelsea Green has spoke at length how she goes in with 20 pitches. Like you got to have something there.
Yeah. And none of them ever work. So I would pitch everything endlessly to anyone who would listen. And so I have this binder, I have these pictures. I walk into his office. In hindsight, at that point, I think he knew what was happening in his life. At the time, I didn't know. Obviously, nobody knew.
Sure.
But I walk in. I'm like, hey, sir. And he's like eating his fucking steak or whatever. I'm like, sir, I have this pitch. I have these pictures. I just want to show you these new pictures. I took the feedback that you gave me, and I have this new character idea. Here's the whole thing. Here's the whole presentation. I have the whole presentation for you. We're ready to go. I can do this whenever you want. It's your idea. I think it's fantastic. I think let's do this. And he looks up. It's not that hectic. You know, I do it a lot more professionally. But he looks up from his meal, and he looks at the picture he's in, and he goes, looks good. And then he looks back down. And I'm just standing there holding these pictures and holding this presentation. I'm like, is there anything that I can do to get a chance? Like, what do you need me to do? I will do anything. Like, please just give me a shot. And he looks up again. He goes, keep on keeping on. And then he looks back down. And I look at him for like 5 seconds. And in my head, I go, I'm fucked. Like, I'm gonna get fired. He has nothing for me. He's not interested in ever doing anything for me. I'm totally screwed. I said, thank you, appreciate it. I walked out, and I walked back to the locker room, and Ali was there, and I'm just staring a hole at the wall. And he knows what just happened.
Sure.
He's had the exact same conversation before. And so we talk about it for a little bit, and I just look at him and I say, I'm like, you and I are completely fucked in this company.
I feel like you've had that revelation a few times.
Yeah, no, I say we're completely fucked in this company unless Vince McMahon either dies or retires. And he was like, yeah, that's pretty much accurate. And then 2 days later, the article comes out, and we're like, oh, yeah. maybe he'll retire.
what did you think after that emerged? And his immediate reaction was, I'm on TV. What's up?
Yeah. Not great. You know, in WWE, there's a lot of hearsay.
Sure.
There's a ton of people saying, this guy did this, this guy did that. I heard this happen. and you have no idea what's true and what's not. So you can't just assume everything you hear is true. Mm-hmm. I heard about that and I saw that article, and I had heard about things like that before, not to that extent, but just like in that realm of possibility. And I, and my brain goes, this is probably true. And so that's obvious. Just seeing what it's about is like, that's not good, obviously. And then seeing his reaction to it, it's like, ah, fuck. And so obviously over the next few weeks, there's a bunch of meetings and this, and
of course
Stephanie was involved somehow, and Hunter was involved somehow. And it's just this whole shifting and nobody knows who's in charge and blah, 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 and that it's stuff, et cetera. Long story short, about a month goes by. Finally, it's like, okay, I have a relationship with Hunter. So I'm going to go. I know that everybody's been all over him, right? Because there's plenty of people who know him way better than me.
I mean, numerous people said that they immediately text him, like, can I have my job back?
Right, yeah. So he's getting bombed with stuff, right? Whether it's from guys who are wrestling now or whatever. So I'm just giving it time. I'm like, maybe something will happen, maybe not, whatever. Finally, like a month or a month and a half goes by. I'm still on Main Event and stuff. I think this was when you're a Main Event watcher, so you probably saw the best Main Event match in history, which was me versus Ali, where we were doing Canadian Destroyers off the top rope and shit.
How did that get approved, by the way? Did you have to ask anybody, or
We just did it. We were both so on tilt. I got yelled at by numerous people in the back for that, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Both producers and talent were like, what the fuck are you doing? You can't be doing that shit. You're killing the crowd. You blah, 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 blah. At that point, we were just trying to rattle the cages. That's all it was.
Yeah.
We had been, because nothing was happening. We were still on Main Event. I'm still T-Bar, and I'm like, bro, all you guys got to do is snap your fingers, and I'm Dominik Dijakovic again. That's like, they did it with LA Knights. So just please do it with me. Like,
yes.
But it wasn't. So I finally made my pitch. I made whatever. They talked about it for whatever. I got a call from Bruce. I thought for sure I was getting fired. I wasn't getting fired. He was telling me that they were moving me down to NXT for 6 months. And I was like, oh shit, that's awesome. Like, that's great. Also, on the other side of my shoulder, I know that almost every time someone gets sent from the main roster to NXT, they end up getting fired. It's just, it's the track record. It's what's happened. It happened with, what was Athena's name? Ember Moon.
Ember Moon, yeah.
It happened with, Killian Dane, one of my close friends, Dane, what happened with him? It happens a lot. You get sent to NXT, you get fired. It's just what happens. So in my head, I was like, oh, fuck, you're probably fucked, or you're maybe fucked, but like, at least it's something, right? At least I get to go down swinging and dying and trying. So I had this whole pitch ready, right? From the Vince stuff, I had this whole thing ready. I brought it, the second I hung up with Bruce, I got a phone call from an unknown blocked number, and I was like, oh, who's this?
Uh-oh.
I picked it up. It was a very funny conversation. And I'm like, hello? And he goes, Dominik Dijakovic. And I'm like, who's this? And he goes, oh shit, Shawn Michaels. I'm like, oh, hey, Shawn. Like, yeah. And so he's talking to me, and he thinks I live in Orlando. So he's like, yeah, you want to come to the TV taping tonight? I'm like, I can't, I would need a flight. He's like, oh shit, you don't live in Orlando? I'm like, no, I live in New Hampshire. He's like, oh, I didn't know we could use people in New Hampshire. I guess we can now. I was like, oh shit, that's awesome. So I'm like, I guess they're gonna fly me into NXT every week. So I was the first person they ever flew in to NXT.
That's pretty cool.
So I set up a meeting with him, Johnny Russo, and Matt Bloom. I get the pitch ready. I get everything ready. The name, the gimmick, here's the vision, here's what I look like, here's my gear, here's all this stuff. I got it all mapped out. I presented it to them, and they can see it in my eyes. They can see that I've presented this a million times before, and it's never been anywhere. And they're like, hey, just to let you know, like, we want you to be involved, and we want to hear what you have to say. And I'm like, okay, yeah, like, people have told me that before. So I pitch it to them. No word of a lie, what you saw on television was exactly to a T what I presented to those three.
That's incredible.
They nailed it. They did exactly what my vision was. They loved it. And it was such a mutually beneficial partnership. I could not possibly be more thankful for what all of the people involved in that process and in that decision to send me there did for me. That being said, I don't think anybody knew the actual plan or what was going to happen or what could come of it. I think we were all on the same page that, like, hey, let's knock it out of the park as much as we can, and then we'll get you back to the main roster, and this will be a gimmick that we can translate to the main roster, and you'll have a chance up there. So up until a month and a half ago, all was going really according to plan, and then it just kind of fell off a cliff for whatever reason.
And I mean, during that run, we saw you have really great matches, like everybody from like Von Wagner to Ilya. Everything from like singles matches to like underground matches, Iron Survivors, Jailhouse Street Fight, all the stuff. Like, it really gave you an opportunity to show, no, I'm still here. I can still do this. And not only can I do this, I can do it with anyone in any type of match, whatever the ingredients might be. I mean, that had to be great for your confidence.
It was very good. Yeah. It was such an extraordinary run. Obviously, there was times in it where I was, like any talent, you know, you get internally frustrated because it's like I was having lots of feuds that were ending with me losing, which is like, yes. It's like I'm the last person who cares about wins and losses. Like, you can ask anybody in the world. I've never complained about losing. I've never complained about booking, anything like that. There's just an association in WWE specifically where if you lose, you tend to vanish off TV for a little bit. And that's just kind of what happens creatively. And if you're winning, then you're in line for championships. And if you have a championship, you're always on TV and you're always getting the, so I was always of the mind of, you know, I just want to be on TV as much as possible, wrestling in whatever capacity that is. And there were stretches in that NXT run where I'd be off for 2 or 3 weeks because I just lost a big feud. Like, Ilya beat me and then I was off TV for a little bit. Or there was a few premium live events in a row during 2023 that I wasn't on. So I wasn't like the happiest camper in the world, but I was like thankful for the opportunity and the TV time, the presentation, everything in the world. And in the back of my mind, I was like, just keep killing it. Just keep killing it. Because once you get to the main roster, you'll have to be a main player. They'll look at you and they'll say, he did everything we asked. And he did this, that, and the other. He put all these guys over. He's our guy. We're going with him. And that was not the vision.
Not so yet. As we wrap up, I mean, you are contractually free. And I had tweeted a while back that yourself and Ali and Shane Haste and Mace have the opportunity to do the funniest thing of all time. Not only do they have the opportunity to do the funniest thing of all time, you can invite Mansoir into the fold now as well. Yep. And he can do his thing. And dare I say, you guys should invade Uganda.
Maybe. <That's> the... I don't know.
Retribution's going there. They're just tilling their dirt in the wrong pattern.
So WWE owns that particular IP, so we can't call ourselves that.
I don't think they're going to be that protective over it, Dijak.
Yeah, they would. Trust me, it's written into my contract. I've reviewed it a number of times. It's in there. There's not a lot in there. I actually own a lot of the stuff that I say, like feast your eyes, all my catchphrases, all that stuff that they usually take because they make t-shirts, but they never made me a t-shirt. So I
listen. Lord White's going to try to recruit you as White Shaft.
Right, maybe.
My God. So, I mean, that's obviously, like, even though it was a terrible angle, terrible execution, it's still something. I kind of liken it to the TNA name. After a while, people long for it. And they're like, well, we know that there was a lot of talent associated with the letters TNA. I think people know there was an awful lot of talent associated with Retribution.
Yeah, it's starting to encroach on the old thing good, where it's like people... Yes. People misremember the Nexus. They're like, oh, I miss the Nexus. The Nexus.
Yes.
When the Nexus was happening, nobody liked the Nexus.
No. For 1 or 2 weeks, and then they're like, oh, we lost Daniel Bryan. All right, we're out.
Yeah, we're out. Yeah. So yeah, it could listen. No, nobody thinks more highly of that group of individuals than me. I think if you had let us be ourselves and let us do the angle the way we wanted to, we would have knocked it out of the fucking park and we would have been the next big stable. But that didn't happen. We had to do someone else's vision. So, but now we can do it if we want. It might be a little expensive, but you to get fair. All the same show, same match, but
worth it. Worth it, though.
People will watch your show just to see what
they will
look like.
Listen, I go to Black Label Pro shows all the time, and they do 14 matches. All they got to do is scale it back to 10. and the budget will be the same. But you've got your booking info up on your Twitter. I'll ask you to recite how people can follow you, because I don't know if you're going to change your handle or how that necessarily
works. I don't know what I can. I had a huge issue with this when I was at T-Bar Retribution forever.
Yes.
Because I was in NXT for like 4 months before I finally was able to get a change to Dijak WWE. So yeah, I'm not going to sweat over that. You know, it's when it changes, it'll change.
When you type in Dijak, he's the guy that comes. Well, okay, now he's one of two guys that comes up, because there's another account that people think is you.
Yeah.
And is very well intended.
As of this moment, all my socials are at Dijak WWE. When that changes, I don't know what it'll change to. If maybe it'll be some other company's letters at the end. I don't know.
I did ask Tony Khan about you today, which is the natural question. AEW, TNA, New Japan, all that stuff. He said, well, first off, he was floored by the question, because I said, hey, Dijak's a free agent tomorrow. And also, have you had any conversations with Becky Lynch or any offers? And he's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that publicly. And I mean, listen, the easy out for you would have been, he's not a free agent until tomorrow. I'm not allowed to talk about it. But he said that he greatly respects you and thinks a lot of you as a performer. So not buried.
Well, I greatly respect. People have this funny idea in their head that I hate AEW and that I was this WWE shill, which is not the case. I was very protective of NXT when I was part of it, which ironically is most of AEW at this point, because Black and Gold just kind of shifted over brands to AEW. So for sure, if people were talking shit about NXT, I would give it right back, because I'm always going to feel that way about myself and about the people that I'm surrounded with and the people that I'm associated with. That being said, if you look down the AEW roster, I've wrestled probably 80% of them. And I was in between Ring of Honor and between NXT Black and Gold. That's like most of the roster right there, right? So I all these people are my friends. So I'm not, at no point was I ever against the
hated
idea.
Hated Kenny Omega. That's what I heard on the internet. Hated Kenny Omega.
So listen, I clarified this a couple months ago in a tweet.
You did.
Kenny and I have, as far as I know, we have no animosity towards one another. When that happened, he made the initial statement. I don't know if it was a work or a shoot or whatever. It doesn't bother me either way. But I heard the interview, or I saw the transcription or whatever, and he was taking shots at a roster that I was part of. So I took shots back, because that's what I will always do. I don't care. I don't care if Vince McMahon took a shot at me. I would have tweeted at Vince McMahon, like, you can go, whatever. You know, I would have done the exact same thing to my boss. If somebody comes at me, I'm always going to defend myself, and it will always be lighthearted and light spirited. And I have the utmost respect for Kenny and everybody else in AEW. And I've never said otherwise. I've said in 1,000 interviews that I think he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and that I respect both him and Cody and everybody who created AEW immensely. And I will never change my viewpoint on that, but I will also never back down from an altercation.
Of course.
I hope that people can respect that, because that's just who I am.
I respect that greatly. I do. Yeah. This is probably the longest interview I've done for in a long time. I want to thank you for being so generous with your time. I want to encourage everybody, please check him out on social media. If you can't find his Twitter, just find him in the replies of Santi Zap's Twitter.
Just search the word ratio and y'all pop
search
up.
The word ratio and he appears.
Yeah, that's me.
Donovan Dijak, I want to thank you so much, man. There's still a ton of stuff I want to talk to you about, so we'll have to do another one in the future. I'm sure we're going to see each other on the road. Listen, we're probably going to be booked for the same shows. You know, I'm out there beating up people in the indies, all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I got to go. I'm getting blown up by my wife.
Guys, he's getting blown up. Until next time, we're out.
Take it easy. Thanks, dude.
Now at Menards, saving money on everything to brighten your home. Bite Electric smart home products make everyday living simply smarter. Customize your home with dimmable, color-changing lighting that better fits your lifestyle. And control your smart home products from anywhere using one easy-to-use app. View our entire selection of smart home products from Bite Electric today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for other great deals happening this week. Save